Hello and welcome. You're listening to Queer Quirks on UMFM 101.5, which broadcasts from the University of Manitoba, located on Treaty 1 territory, the lands of the Anishinaabeg, Nehiyawak, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation. Now let's take a moment here to acknowledge that land acknowledgements do nothing to return that land to its rightful owners or to pursue justice on the basis of the past history of exploitation and degradation of Indigenous peoples within Canada. So if you haven't already and you can afford to, I strongly suggest that you make a recurring contribution to an Indigenous organization to make a concrete financial action towards pursuing the justice that should be our goal instead of acknowledgement. This is Queer Quirks, a queer talk and music show which examines news, history, culture, and current events through a queer lens. I'm your host, Lee Fraser, they, them, and I'm a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Manitoba. But more importantly for the show, I have a long history of queerness and of advocacy and volunteerism in the queer community. The goals of the show are to showcase artists and creators who are part of minoritized genders and or sexualities, often referred to with initialisms like 2SLGBTQIA+. And I also discuss how events around the world affect queer communities because of how the world treats people who are minoritized genders and sexualities. Often this topic includes mistreatment and violence. I do my best to provide trigger warnings, and please let me know at queerquirks@gmail.com if you feel there's anything I'm missing. I also try to be balanced in my discussion of different groups, particularly if I'm not a member of that group. So wherever possible, I will direct you to further resources and readings or highlight people who are doing work from that perspective that I cannot provide with nuance and genuine understanding. I try to keep the show accessible, which means I rely on publicly accessible work where I can, and where I can't or where I want to highlight something that is not publicly accessible, I will work to provide interpretations and discussion to make it useful to people who have not pursued the particular career that I have. This last is very important because if you are someone who is, for example, bisexual, lesbian, trans, non-binary, if you are anyone who is a part of the groups that I talk about on this show, I believe that you're entitled to work that talks about your life experiences, and you're entitled to it in a form that's useful to you. So, if there is anything that I'm missing or anything that you want to comment on, I strongly encourage you to get in touch because I am always happy to hear about ways that I can understand the world better or work to make the show and what I do more useful and in some cases more entertaining. So today I want to primarily play some lovely music that I found. I've been spending a little bit more time listening to music, getting out in the outdoors, walking my dogs, and so that's something that hopefully will be entertaining and introduce you to some new artists. And in particular, I want to play some songs of Shawnee Kish today because I was listening to Unreserved on CBC, a wonderful show. And there's some wonderful Juno nominees this year. And I think that one, we need to pay more attention to Juno Awards because awards given in Canada and honoring Canadian artists are incredibly important. And a lot of our media gets eaten up by the US, which is bullshit. And also, in particular, Indigenous musicians are just crossing genres, creating genres, doing things that people haven't done with music before because they come from a place that is really different than a lot of contemporary musicians. And then also, obviously, they like live in the society that we have, but they draw on sometimes traditional music or sometimes just kind of the incredible creativity and resilience that I associate in large parts with the Indigenous peoples of Canada, because obviously with what they've been through, they have had to be resilient and creative and forge new ways of being themselves on their lands, whatever they have left to them, or reclaiming
or rediscovering parts of their heritage. So that's simply my perspective. So it's more important, obviously, that you listen to and hear from the artists themselves. But certainly in terms of the unreserved interviews, I heard from artists who are navigating indigeneity from different perspectives, navigating music from different perspectives. Obviously, indigeneity was a focus given the show that it's on, but these are artists who are from all sorts of genres, all sorts of approaches to music, instrumentals, vocals, things like that. And it's, of course, best to hear in their words what role indigeneity plays in their music and also where it comes from. Because to be honest, I've talked about this on the show before, I don't actually know a lot about music genres and how to describe them. I can say I like something, or this makes me think of this, or sometimes I provide commentary on lyrics because that's what stands out to me, but I'm not well-versed enough in music mechanics to describe to you what these artists are doing. All I can tell you is that it's really cool. So, this is something where the stories behind the nominees is really cool. Getting to know people on Turtle Island who are making cool music is really cool. And so I really encourage you to check it out. And I really encourage you in particular to check out Shawnee Kish, a two-spirit musician and someone who is just making really interesting, fun music that I think is going to be really good vibes for the summer. So I'm going to play Got It Bad for you first, which is the music video is her singing with her wife, which for all of us in the queer community is absolutely adorable. So this is Got It Bad by Shawnee Kish. They give me reasons why I should walk away. You looking at me, girl, what can I say? I've got it. I've got it. So that was the incomparable Shawnee Kish with Got It Bad. And someone who continues to be just incredibly interesting, both as a person and as an artist. And it can really be refreshing, though, to watch this little video where you can, you know, look up Shawnee Kish, look at all this music, all these accomplishments. And then the reason that I chose that video and that song to be the first one that I played on the show today, and I might have played some of her music before, even maybe this song, but in introducing you to someone who is a Juno nominee, who is an accomplished, amazing, interesting artist, it is also just so heartwarming and adorable to do it with a music video that is just her and her wife dancing to her song. And I think that that is such an incredibly cute human moment to share with people who enjoy her music. So rather than, you know, many of the beautifully crafted images that we see with her music and the, you know, gorgeous model shots that you see on her website and things like that, you get to see her just being a cute person having fun. And that is absolutely adorable. So it's definitely something that stood out to me, and I think as well in terms of something I've talked about a bit on the show before, as it's queer joy, and that's something that is incredibly exciting. And I hope that as Two-Spirit Joy too, it's something that stands out to the Indigenous community, because I know there are a lot of Two-Spirit youth who may not have the connection or the people in their lives to see living the way that they want to be and you know, thriving. And so I think it's also incredibly, phenomenally important to be able to highlight these people who are accomplished, incredible, and share identities with people who are often told in a variety of ways that they cannot or will not be successful because of their identities. And in that way, I mean both queerness and indigeneity and Two-Spirit, which again, Two-Spirit does not represent a subcategory or queer identity, but is an Indigenous identity which captures a range of what we consider in colonist language to be, you know, gender and sexuality, but it is so much more, and it is a spiritual identity, and it is a uniquely Indigenous identity. So I really encourage you, if, with any group that we don't know many of, because there's not many Two-Spirit folks, to look at how people describe themselves, and to remember, of course, that one person describing themselves does not describe the group, but looking at how different people describe their Two-Spirit identity is also a great practice for Canadians in general, because, of course, Two-Spirit identity often holds some connection to Indigeneity and living on Turtle Island and the kind of lifetime of living in what we call Canada. That's not to say that all Two-Spirit folks would describe themselves that way, but certainly some of the narratives that I've been lucky enough to hear have had all of this complexity in it. So it's something that if someone's willing to share that with you, or if they've shared that story online, you learn a lot from it that I encourage you to sit with and mull over and think about how we need to take action on or support or recognize or just embrace that identity being in the world and having that opportunity to understand it in some way. So to encourage you sort of to further reading or listening in this case, I am going to post a couple of links that can help you to understand Two-Spirit identities in the words of Two-Spirit folks. And again, like any group, you cannot take one definition and decide that it's going to fit for all people. So obviously, if you have a Two-Spirit person in your life, don't just decide that you're going to go out and apply the label that you heard another Two-Spirit person talk about to them, but use it as a jumping off point for understanding the complexity and ways that people might talk about identity. Now, also, I want to talk about a couple of professionals today who I was lucky enough to be surprised with in my life, who were members of the trans community. And I think that that really stood out to me because it's unusual to come across people just in a casual way and get an opportunity to recognize people like myself just living in society doing good work. And so in how I encountered these people, it was by things that were unrelated to LGBTQIA issues. And so that is really, really cool. And that is really interesting and exciting. And so I hope by talking about what those two moments meant to me that I can highlight some of the importance both of representation. But in this case, this is not something where it was, you know, in a TV show or things like that, where we can either have accurate representation of the world or we can choose to exclude certain people, namely people like me often, from it. This was just things that I encountered in kind of my professional and personal interests. And so that was a different kind of exciting. And I think that for me, I want to highlight who these people are and what it meant to me, because I hope that other professionals know that it enormously matters when we can identify them out there, and that it just gives someone else a lovely warm feeling. And also that I hope it represents more and more how we will just see people being able to be themselves and talk about things like their gender in their professional context. So for the time being, it's relatively uncommon, and it serves as sort of a example for me of how we might go about presenting this to the world or talking about it, or just an example that I can kind of put it out there and it won't be or won't have to be a big deal. So I do want to play some more music for you, but first I want to mention the specific videos that I'm going to post regarding two-spirit identity. And that is something that I think is really important, because though I talked about all of the amazing Indigenous nominees for Juno Awards, and we finally have two categories, traditional and contemporary, Indigenous Artist or Group of the Year nominees. So we have finally an opportunity to see a little bit more breadth and see an opportunity for more artists to be recognized and nominated. It is something that I can't emphasize enough matters incredibly to see a two-spirit artist up there, because every time you get to see someone from a group that can remain unseen, and for a variety of reasons, and again, there's a variety of identities that can exist and be relatively silenced or rendered invisible because of who they are, but in the case of two-spirit people, what I'm talking about here is simply the fact that due to colonization and ongoing colonization and racism in what we call Canada today, we're actively have made and cut down and destroyed Indigenous populations. We have already made them such a small group. And then two-spirit people are such a small, precious, amazing group within them. So it's extra special. It's extra special to get to see someone be a part of this award and something that Shawnee Kish has talked about, hoping that her two-spirit story specifically is something that helps to inspire young people. So it's incredibly special. And so she talks a little bit in an article that I'll post about, quote, "I am Indigenous, I identify as two-spirit, and it took me some time in my life to really honor and cherish those parts of me. There was a time in my life where I was closeted and I didn't feel like I could be who I was as a two-spirit person," end quote. So she mentions, as I probably mentioned in reference to the term before, that it is not a new tradition, that the word two-spirit was decided on in the 1990s by Indigenous folks as a word specifically to represent them and the numerous identities that it can cover. And so it's something that is really incredible to see started as a conversation as well within music. So it's important, Shawnee Kish talks about in the article, to sort of be able to honor heritage and culture and reclaim things and start conversations with younger people. And also, I think, incredibly, to get to see people having success in a way that a lot of younger people connect to, myself included. When I was younger, obviously, there's a variety of amazing careers and interesting things you can do with your life. But when you're younger, sometimes the things that you see as especially valuable and interesting, important are things like music or entertainment. And that's a lot of what we're exposed to. And a lot of the ways that we explore our feelings and thoughts. So I think that it's very important. And I think that as a white descendant of settlers on Turtle Island, I am lucky and want to be especially conscious that it is a special thing to get to see and recognize these artists, and a special reminder to me that that my allyship and efforts towards Two-Spirit folks in particular matter, because it's both incredibly precious that they have survived, and it is important to me as a part of community that touches and crosses over on theirs a little bit, by which I mean the 2SLGBTQIA community as a group, to be able to get to know the experiences that are affecting Two-Spirit folks, so that I can ensure that I am, as a person who can share parts of, say, loving people who are identified as a similar gender or not being within a binary gender, that I can be someone who makes sure that the spaces that I'm in that are queer spaces are spaces that are meant to also protect and honor and hold Two-Spirit people. So from a purely queer perspective, also to get to see Shawnee Kish marry an Olympian, Jen Kish. And if you go on Shawnee's Instagram or Jen's Instagram, you can see pictures from their wedding. That is very powerful too. And that's exciting and important to me. So as I've said, queer joy is also very powerful. And so I want to play you another song as well. And first though, I want to hear the word Two-Spirit and what does it mean from Inquiry. By them. And so I'm just going to briefly play a clip here, and then I'd like you to be able to go and find this yourself. So this is Geo Neptune talking about it.
Though the label has only been used since the 90s, the concept of the Two-Spirit is something Indigenous groups have identified with for centuries. But what does Two-Spirit actually mean, and where does it come from?
So that was Geo Neptune. And that was the start of a video exploring that. And so it's something that really matters in terms of hearing people in their own words. And I think that that's where we should start, really for everyone, but in particular for the reasons I mentioned with Two-Spirit people, it's very important because we don't have the right to take on the words and perspectives of Indigenous cultures, and that's something that is important to be mentioned because we have tried, and there's a lot of appropriation within the history of also actively destroying the active attempts to eliminate Indigenous people and their cultures. So Geo Soctama Neptune is a Passamaquoddy Two-Spirit person, master basket maker, activist, storyteller, model, educator, and uses they, them pronouns. And so they are a wonderful jumping off point for talking about this, also because they're just adorable and really interesting and fun. And then I also will share in the links a link that has particular significance for me because it is Mani Chikabi. And if you remember, Mani Chikabi has written a book about being Two-Spirit, and it's something that explores her life within both what we call Canada and what we call the United States. So on Turtle Island, experiencing life as an Indigenous person, experiencing life as someone who has, you know, named themselves in many ways, but uses the term lesbian. And it's really important that we get to see that history as well. And that's another point that I did talk about the book on the show before. And Mani is a really incredible person for sharing what they went through and also for living through it. And that's a really valuable narrative to me as a person who wants to know that part of a collective history of, for example, in this case, lesbian history, as well as something that crosses over into two-spirit history, or sorry, that's not really the right way to say that, but more centrally is two-spirit history. But Mani Chikapi also uses the term lesbian and represents a survivor of a time that I am lucky enough to benefit from, where people had to really, really fight to not be actively persecuted for their sexuality and actively, aggressively hurt and gay bashed. And then, of course, Mani also talks in the book about experiencing racism and the struggles of indigeneity and navigating that within, again, something that's an interesting sort of touching of worlds, because the dating pool of people for whom queerness comes into their relationships is not very large. And so, of course, if you're a minority within it, and you're navigating it when it might be, say, primarily white, because we are in what we call Canada, then that's something that can make a big difference to your experiences and can make it more difficult or unwelcoming in community spaces that you should be welcome in. So there's so much complexity there, and it's so interesting and valuable to have this opportunity to hear from this, because we do have people who are willing to talk about their lives and talk about what it means to be who they are and have lived through certain time periods, for example. So I want to play you another song here by Shawnee Kish, and then I will talk some more about those professionals in a bit here, but it's very special that we still get to hear those stories. And there's a final video that I will post too that is about Canada's two-spirit doctor, and so that's something that I think also represents a good story in many ways, and another perspective on two-spirit, but also is focused more on somebody's career. And so that is another point where I think just for exposure and knowledge of working professionals hits on the themes that I'm talking about today. So here is another song for you, and this is Mr. Ty by Shawnee Kish.
No. Yeah.
So that was Shawnee Kish with another song that I think is really kind of a Canadian sound. And it feels wrong to apply that to a Indigenous artist because of, you know, the active and ongoing history of colonialism in Canada, what we call Canada. Really, what I mean by that is the sound of artists that have a more independent, creative sound, I guess. There's something I associate with Canadian music that has almost a, I don't know how to say this, kind of realer sound, in the sense that I don't know if this is a, if someone who knows music better would be able to describe sort of maybe the studio quality of this or what comes through. You know, when you hear an acoustic song or you hear a live performance and you can hear a note coming or a drum being hit or things like that in a way that really captures the physicality of the thing. That's something that I associate with Canadian music. Maybe it's something about how we record or the size of studios or things like that, but that's kind of how it comes through to me. So that's what I pick up on. So that, I hope, is something that has come through in other music that I've played, and that encourages us to look for more Canadian music because there's something really special and interesting that happens with our artists and with people, I think, too, who've had to strive in a more arts-based environment than entertainment environment in some ways, because we do have like programs and grants that provide funding and people who approach projects in different ways, and all of that probably shapes our music scene a little bit differently. Though, of course, there are people who leave Canada and go to the US in order to pursue music in a way that might be more profitable to them, which, fair enough. So I do want to play another song for you, and that is Shawnee Kish covering for Non-Blondes, What's Up. And that's something that I just think has a really cool sound, and that if you're familiar with that song, that you'll probably like this cover. So here's Shawnee Kish with What's Up.
Trying to get up that great big kilo for a destination. I realized quickly that I knew I should, and the world was made up of this brotherhood of man, for whatever that means. And so I I'm feel still, I'm trying to get up that great picky love for a destination.
So that was Shawnee Kish with another really beautiful song, this time a cover of What's Up. And it's actually a song that it has such an iconic sound to it, and most people can kind of recognize the hook, that I think it's unusual, at least for me, to find a cover of it that I actually like. But personally, I like this cover better than the original. I love the sound of it. I think she's captured the original voice and kind of depth and timbre going on, but at the same time, it is a little bit more mellow. It kind of allows me to pick up the depth of the lyrics, and I think that it's just a really, really cool song. And so this cover is wonderful to get an opportunity to see kind of other sides of Shawnee Kish and her skills, and I'm excited to see what she does next in terms of songs. So there's a lot of gorgeous music going on here. So I wanted to talk about a couple of people for whom their identity as either a minoritized gender or minoritized sexuality wasn't a central part of them, but like, that's not the right way to say that. It's not, let's say, the way that I encountered them. So they're not necessarily doing gender and sexuality work, so you wouldn't be that surprised, I think, necessarily to encounter my identity in a lot of the spaces that I work in, and especially because I do teach and research on these topics. So I think that while there is those of us who gravitate towards those things, and it can be very good, it's good for people who share that identity to conduct research on it or provide services, for example. The fact is that 2SLGBTQIA people are everywhere, and, you know, we're accountants and Olympians and musicians and, you know, gardeners and all sorts of things. And so the more that we normalize that part of our identity being part of other professional spaces, the more people will come to see that as just a part of who we are, which is how it should be. It's not the central or most important part of who we are. Different people center their identity differently in their lives and may or may not, you know, spend as much time in queer-oriented spaces. Certainly lots of people early on in their coming out, if they're coming out younger especially, in the kind of generation I came out in, would spend a lot of time kind of enthusiastically participating in pride activities and gender and sexuality rights and things like that. And then that might taper off as you become more comfortable in your identity and explore yourself in different ways. And so I want my personal characteristics to just be a part of what I do. I may or may not continue in the profession that I'm in. It may pivot different directions. I may end up doing, you know, writing or analysis work that's not related to LGBTQIA plus stuff. And so while that those parts of my identity might be something that make people more comfortable when I'm working on those topics, the fact is that they're always simply going to be there. And they would be there if I was a lawyer, they would be there if I was a counselor, they would be there if I was a swim coach. And so often it's more acceptable and comfortable to come out in spaces that are explicitly open to and in favor of justice for 2SLGBTQIA people. Because naturally, if you're, you know, conducting research on how those people are treated, you're likelier to be someone who's treated well yourself while being out at your job. But when we see people out in different professional spaces, it hits differently, at least for me. And it is a warm, comforting feeling for me to encounter someone in the professional world who just happens to be a part of my community without me, for example, having gone looking for them in that capacity. So it helps me and hopefully others feel more normal. And it also familiarizes people with our identities when it's not centered on our community at that time. So that's something that is really useful as well, because people can think of to us LGBTQIA people as sort of being like quarantined to our own special group or having our own special interests or events, which is, to my mind, ludicrous because, I mean, we do have pride because it's important to remind people that we are here and that it's acceptable and to celebrate ourselves. But sexuality and gender are things that affect all people. And so advances that protect to us LGBTQIA folks often protect other groups as well. And there's lots of crossover and lots of commonalities. And we have a lot more in common than we do necessarily that's different, except in the way that sometimes the world treats us. So it's important to just be out there and just be a part of what people think of as quote unquote normal life, as opposed to being part of specifically life where you have to have an interest in gender and sexuality issues. So with that in mind, I was really delighted when I happened across Deirdre McCloskey, and I was first delighted because Deirdre McCloskey is really cool in general and unrelated to her gender. So there's several levels of how cool she is. She's now a professor emerita of economics and history and of English and communication, adjunct in classics and philosophy at the University of Illinois in Chicago. So there's so much that's cool about that sentence, including that she goes kind of across different disciplines and different subjects, and that's something that I think is really cool. And so, I mean, of course, there are things that I don't necessarily agree with in her work, and there's stuff that I don't necessarily have as easy a time relating to myself and what I do, but I am most excited to see a large body of work from her where things have evolved as well. And she will talk about things like how her opinions and perspectives have changed. And that's something that I think is really cool. And I think that's really valuable because we often see this resistance in a lot of academic work to changing your mind, which is hilarious and ridiculous because the evolution of a theory is a theory sort of like changing its mind, quote unquote, essentially updating what we think is correct based on new information is not a bad thing. But when you've worked in one area for a long time or you spent a lot of time on a particular subject, if there is a flaw in how you're approaching it or new perspectives are coming to light or new information is coming to light from any direction that highlights that maybe what you're doing has not been the best to find things out, or maybe it will only be useful if looked at in a certain light, then those are steps that you can take to ensure that your work is seen and interpreted correctly and to make it something that is more of a contribution to everyone and something that I think can only be to the good. So I definitely love to see it when people who are prominent like Deirdre McCloskey speak out about this because of the fact that we sometimes see this professional resistance to saying I'm wrong about something. So it's something that is really exciting to see evolve in her views, and also that you can see in terms of the work that she does across things like history and communication and stuff like that, because of course, as she incorporates the views of a different area, people obviously look at and think about information in certain ways. And maybe there is something that's not familiar or something that she can meld with the perspective that she has as an economist. And so there's just so much that is really interesting and valuable. So it's something that in terms of looking at your own work and looking at other people's work and continuing to be someone who has relevant contributions, I think there's so many good things that it reflects about the mind underneath that. So you can probably tell that I am a bit of a fan of Deirdre McCloskey and that she's a really, really interesting person. She's someone who contributed to what I consider a very important work, a book called The Cult of Statistical Significance. I'm in trouble saying that. Published in 2008. And if you are interested in statistics and in positivism, then you are somebody who might find this interesting. It is a book that's essentially about problems with fixating on statistical significance and not sometimes practical effects, effect sizes, things like that. It's about using things like statistics in a way that could be more effective, and some problems with how we currently use them. So I won't dwell on that because I know not everyone is as interested in it as I am. But I will post Deirdre McCloskey's website. She has a number of really interesting, incredible works, and she's got just a very valuable perspective. So that's something that is useful to any academic starting out as well, I think, too. Anyone who wants to look at cross-disciplinary work. And then, of course, Deirdre McCloskey is trans. So the way that she describes it, to put it in her words from her website, she describes herself as a literary, quantitative, postmodern, free market, progressive, Episcopalian, ex-Marxoid, Midwestern woman from Boston who was once a man. Not conservative, I'm a Christian classical liberal, end quote. So there's a lot in that statement, and certainly a lot of trans folks don't describe themselves as having used to be the gender that they were assigned at birth, but we're not entitled to tell anyone how to describe themselves. So certainly nobody is entitled to tell Deirdre McCloskey anything. So she does have a tremendous body of work. So I should say this with a grain of salt, given maybe someone's going to find something that is, you know, not great in her work or something that I, with my values, would definitely disagree with. But, and I have already found some things, but not some things that I think rise to the level of, you know, something that would significantly change my opinion of her as a professional and a public figure and a cool person. So Deirdre McCloskey is a very prominent professional person, and she also happens to be trans. So she's a trans woman. She wrote a book called Crossing, a Memoir, in 1999 about her experience. I have not read that because, again, I encountered her work as an economist and as someone who is looking for the works of critical statisticians and things like that. So she has done some work on behalf of the LGBTQ community and things like that. But really, in terms of what I'm talking about today and what I think is most important and interesting about her, she's just someone for whom it is out there that she's trans, and it's not a significant part of her professional life. She doesn't do work primarily on gender or sexuality issues. She's just an economist and a teacher, a professor, an established author, an incredibly prolific academic publisher, something like over 400 academic articles, and she happens to be trans. So there is a lot of cool things about, you know, encountering identities that we don't normally get to see in the public eye, just, you know, as part of someone's life as an economist. So the other person that I wanted to talk about who is a really cool professional that I encountered is Lindo Bacon. So Dr. Lindo Bacon is extremely cool. So another person who's incredible. I encountered their work through looking into Health at Every Size, which is the sort of philosophy towards like body size discourse and things that I subscribe to, and through a very cool book called Anti-Diet. And as you might know, I'm interested in practical effects and evidence-based care and things like that. So obviously I'm on the side of things like Health at Every Size. And so Dr. Lindo Bacon has been very much a big part of transforming a lot of weight discourse and moving away from diet culture and critiquing the continued recommendation of, you know, things that don't work, such as trying to shrink your body, which is not something that is an effective method or that there's things that work with. So to read you a little bit about their mission from their website, just to give you an orientation before I talk a little bit about their work. Their mission, as they stated, is, quote, to promote social and economic justice and help generate a culture of belonging, to galvanize a body positivity movement which celebrates the influence of our multiple intersecting identities, to provide critical thought, inspiring vision, and practical strategies you need to celebrate and care for your own body, and to help you develop your skills to educate, motivate, and inspire others, and nurture a culture of belonging, end quote. So Dr. Linda Bacon is badass. They have written two best-selling books, Health at Every Size, The Surprising Truth About Your Weight, and Body Respect, What Conventional Health Books Get Wrong, Leave Out, or Just Plain Fail to Understand About Weight. And so both of these things have been enormously powerful in transforming people who are doing work in terms of counseling people who are struggling with eating disorders or dietitians or things like that, and working to move away from kind of embedded moral diet culture beliefs and things like that. And so if you are someone who's interested in things like that, because I don't want to take up your time talking about it here necessarily, I would point you towards a fabulous podcast, which introduced me to a number of these things, and that is Food Psych. And so that's by a really cool dietitian. And that's Christy Harrison. And then also, of course, I encountered Food Psych because I was looking at an article about maintenance phase. And as you might know from previous episodes, I'm in love with Aubrey Gordon. And Aubrey Gordon is one of the hosts of Maintenance Phase. So go ahead and follow this podcast. Check out Aubrey Gordon and everything she's done. Get your citation needed and the BMI is trash t-shirt like I have. It's hard not to fall in love with queer women. They're out there. They're amazing. It's hard. So anyway, Dr. Lindo Bacon, back to this. They have also, you might get a theme here in people I find very interesting, kind of a broad disciplinary purview. So they've done stuff in health education, psychology, biology, women's studies, social justice, health, weight, and nutrition. They're very, very prolific. They're very cool. They're in the news a lot, and you can find a lot of this on their website. And so I will include a link to their website here as well in the show notes. But they talk a little bit about their name. And actually, when I encountered them and their name, I think I looked them up just because I wanted to know what else they did with Health at Every Size. So I'm not even sure actually if their name and pronouns came up as part of what I saw. So they use they, them pronouns, of course, because that is what I'm using to refer to them. And they have a lovely insert on their website that's an excerpt from their books that talks about why it's important to ask about pronouns and get them correct. And as a person who's very much on the side of getting things correct, I strongly support that presentation of things, and also anyone who presents a kind and nuanced reasoning. So they have a brief piece on their website that is probably a bit more kind and patient than my approach to people getting their back up about asking pronouns is, because my approach is get over it. But they have a wonderful longer piece that is really cool about their name and their gender. Now, I want to encourage you to read this because I think it is really powerful. And it's something that's really important. And they talk about learning significance around the name that they were given at their birth, in their bat mitzvah, and some of that ritual and success and desire that their parents had for them. And then they talk about how they came to changing their name and what it means to them now, and the continuity that it has to the name that they were given at birth, and how they recognize it and it sits well with them. So I think it's a lovely little thing to share, and it's really cool to have that on their site. And I think that it's something that obviously means that their book captures more of who they are as a person, because the gender information on their site and the pronoun information on their site both come from excerpts from their book that came out more recently, Radical Belonging, How to Survive and Thrive in an Unjust World and Transform It for the Better. But they are just a really cool, really interesting professional. And they have resources on their website about looking for social justice communities to be more inclusive and things like that. And they have accountability, so you can find that on their website, where they have written in response to if they said something too soon and if it is something that didn't sit well with the information that was out there, or if they've updated their opinion based on new information. And I think that that is really important. So again, that's not to say, much like Deirdre McCloskey, that I agree with everything that they've done, but that I do very strongly agree with professionals being open, accountable, and transparent. And I personally love professionals being open about their identity. And in some cases, if you have a established body of work like Deirdre McCloskey, and then you transition, obviously that's something that you might not be able to keep to yourself. Certainly people like Lindo Bacon might not necessarily have to speak on it. They don't have to include all the things that they do on their site or write books on it, and they have, and I think that's wonderful, especially for people like myself who might eventually see themselves in a professional environment. It is nice to know that there's some of us out there. So that's it for me for today. And make sure to check out the work of some of these people and some of those wonderful Juno nominee artists, including Shawnee Kish, who honestly I think should win.